Well, let me introduce my guests to you. In Madison, Wisconsin, we have John Nichols, a writer at The Nation magazine. In Washington, D.C., Anthony Randazzo, a fellow at the Reason Foundation. And also in Washington, D.C., economist Thomas Pally. Welcome to the program, gentlemen. Clearly a lot of angry people there. John, President Obama saying that fat cat bankers and banks just don't get it. Is he right?
Well, that's a complicated question. Of course, the banks get it if the point is to make a lot of money. They're doing exactly what their stockholders and frankly, their CEOs want to do. But if the president is referring to some sort of social responsibility, some sort of commitment to the broader good of the United States, to the broader good of the U.S. economy, no, they don't get it.
In fact, three of the bank CEOs that were invited to the White House didn't even show up. Exactly, and President Obama is saying that they owe a commitment because they had all this government help. They went cap in hand to Washington when they needed support.
Well, of course, they should have that commitment, but it is pretty silly to assume that they will. These banks are in competition. If one of them started to become responsible, somebody else would step into the irresponsible place. The fact of the matter is the person in your clip was right, the guy who said, look, you're going to have to regulate these banks. A failure to aggressively regulate means that nothing will change.
Thomas, do you think banks are listening? The Bank of America Corp says it will increase loans to small and medium businesses by $5 billion next year. Do people think that that is what is needed?
Well, $5 billion is a trivial amount in terms of the American economy. I think John Nichols said it exactly right. They're in the business of maximizing profits, and that unless that business activity is surrounded by appropriate regulation, it doesn't produce the best outcomes for society. And the president got it right also when he said, look, you know, you come here and you say, you hear what the country wants, but yet all your lobbyists on the Hill are opposing everything we're trying to do.
But Thomas, banks are saying that any intrusion on their business is unneeded, unwarranted, it affects profits and it affects competitiveness.
Surely, this is a complicated issue, and let me try and help your viewers understand perhaps one way of thinking about this issue. There are three questions we should ask ourselves. Is the legislation that's being proposed a good thing? Is it enough? And will it fix the economy? And I would say, yes, it is a good thing. It's not enough. And by itself, it will not fix the economy. But why is it a good thing? Well, looking back at the experience we've just had, we see that greed plus deregulation plus a tidal wave of credit is a recipe for disaster. The way to make the market work for the country is to put in place regulation that allows profit maximization to work in the appropriate direction. And that's really the framework that we should be thinking about this issue.
Anthony, do you agree this legislation does not go far enough?
No, I absolutely disagree. I think it actually is going too far. I think that the legislation that was passed by the House actually does too much. It's attempting to solve the too big to fail problem, but what it winds up doing is it puts into U.S. law that certain banks are going to be labeled too big to fail. It creates a permanent bailout fund. If Americans and people around the world are upset with the banks getting bailed out, they should be upset with this legislation.
Okay, well, let's just tell our viewers what the legislation is all about. The Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act covers all financial institutions and consumers, including homeowners, borrowers, and credit card holders. It creates the Financial Services Oversight Council, made up of senior government finance officials who will monitor the markets for potential threats. Companies will need contingency plans for their own failure, and the government will be able to dissolve any firm that could threaten the economy. A consumer finance protection agency will oversee consumer lending, such as mortgages and credit cards, and give greater powers to states to deal with lenders. And executive salaries will be voted on by company shareholders, federal regulators will have to approve compensation practices, although not actual pay. John Anthony there saying that it goes too far. I mean, I'm not an expert in economy, but this looks like the bill is geared towards protecting consumers. Isn't that a good thing?
It's absolutely great that parts of the bill are geared toward protecting consumers. But remember, this is an omnibus bill. This bill is supposed to deal with a whole range of issues, beginning with the woman who wants to get a loan to buy a car and working all the way up to the CEO of the biggest bank in the world. And it does some things well, it does some things poorly. What it does well is establish a consumer financial protection agency. This is something that we've needed for a long time, an agency that will look after the interests of working Americans, ordinary folks, and really people even outside the United States who may have financial interests here. That's good. The second thing that it does that's very, very good is establish an audit of the Federal Reserve. That's our essentially our overseer of banking and our big bank in the U.S. And that's never been done in an effective way. The audit is a very healthy thing. What this bill fails to do is to begin to address that too big to fail issue. Anthony is right in a sense that it locks in some of these very large banks when, and now Anthony will disagree with me on this, when I think, and a lot of people think, those big banks should be broken up. There shouldn't be a bank that can be defined as too big to fail and then allowed to continue.
Anthony,
so this
what
bill
do you make
does
of that
not
point?
Address some of the basic pathologies.
It doesn't address the issue of dismantling the really big banks, the ones that caused the problems in the first place.
No, I don't think the problem is that banks are too big. I think the problem is that the government for decades was essentially saying, had this implicit guarantee that they would rescue any of these large firms. What I think that a lot of what this bill tries to do is it tries to get at some of the problems that built up in the system over the years that actually wound up blowing up in 2008. And the attitude of Congress is, okay, well, capital regulations were a problem and derivatives were a problem, and so we're going to go out and we're going to try and solve those. What I think a better approach would be is to say, not break up the banks, but to put in place certain broad regulations with bankruptcy and basically say to the banks, look, if you fail, you're going to be dissolved. We're going to have an ordered process for how to deal with people that lend you money so that you do not pose a systemic risk to the rest of the economy. And there's going to be a very ordered sort of breakdown if you get too big, or if you fail and you are too big. But we shouldn't be breaking apart these banks. We shouldn't be capping the size of banks, because then you are saying essentially to companies, you can only succeed so far, and you can only succeed up to this particular level. And that's not good for competitiveness. That's not good for the growth of a robust economy.
Thomas, what's your take on this? Banks are going to have to plan for their own failure?
Well, let me back up on three things. First of all, I think this is a good bill in the right direction, and I'm a little surprised to hear Anthony say, apart that he's in disagreement with so many pieces of the bill, one of the great pieces of the bill, which John mentioned, is there's something called say on pay. We have in this country a CEO top management pay problem. We need to restore some shareholder control. The bill does it. That's something that I think a conservative economist should support. The bill has derivatives regulation in there. It forces a lot more derivatives to pass through clearing exchanges. That's going to be good for transparency. That's going to improve pricing efficiency by increasing information. That, again, is something a conservative economist should support. I don't know why they're against it. We have consumer protection in there, and I think this is a good thing, too. Bear with me just while I wrap up here. Consumer protection is a good thing. Federal Reserve, that is, has responsibility for that issue under existing law. It has failed. The culture of the Fed has no respect for the consumer. It's much more interested in monetary policy. There's a mismatch between the banks, the financial businesses, and ordinary working individuals who are not financially sophisticated. The Consumer Protection Agency is vitally needed to fix that mismatch. Now, the big thing, the last issue is this too big to fail. And I'm afraid I disagree with both John and Anthony here. Anthony is living in some sort of fairyland, some wonderland, If you look back at the crisis, look, the banks that failed were Bear Stearns, were Lehman Brothers. They wouldn't have qualified as too big to fail. The point is, there's too much integration in there. Once the confidence in the system evaporates, you have to step in and fix it and be a lender of last resort. In fact, much more than a lender of last resort in this crisis, and that's what the Fed did. And the point is that if you don't have that in place, the thing is going to collapse. So the too big to fail is a bit of a red herring. John says break them up. I don't think that's right either. This is a global economy. You need big banks to finance, to participate in the global economy, to a fully integrated, efficient financial system. If you need big banks then, and if you can't avoid, then in that case you need to make sure that they are properly regulated, and that's the solution here. A living will for the banks is part of it. If they get into trouble, they'll be wrapped up orderly, in an orderly way. Confidence will be maintained because the Federal Reserve is backstopping the system.
But part of this legislation also gives
living will.
Part of this legislation also gives the government the right to wrap up healthy firms if they think that there could be some risks to the economy.
Well, that's indeed right. Not to wrap them up, it'll be a case of probably splitting them up or something like that. There's no right of confiscation or anything like that. If the firm is posing a systemic risk, then the systemic risk regulator has the right to intervene and change the rules. And that's entirely appropriate, because the market will not work well without these type of regulations that maintain the confidence of all the participants.
Anthony, I wonder how much the banks are going to back this, given that President Obama has asked them for their support. It's interesting that many banks now are rushing to pay back their government funding. Citigroup and Wells Fargo are the latest. Is that because they're back on their feet or because they just want the government out of their business?
Well, I mean, it's probably a little bit of both. I'm sure none of these banks want the government integrated into their business. I mean, there's a joke here in Washington that Citigroup can't do anything without the Treasury Department say so. I mean, I'm sure Citigroup doesn't like that, but that's not good for the way these banks are supposed to be run. People in the government are not bank operators. That's not good for Wall Street or for Washington. But in some cases, in the case of Wells Fargo, I think they really are back on their feet. I mean, some of them probably are maybe rushing a little bit to pay back this money because they don't want to pay caps. I mean, Bank of America is trying to find a new CEO, and it's probably hard to find a new CEO that's going to come in and not get paid very much money to do the job because Washington has these arbitrary pay caps. But that sense of arbitrariness is really the core of some of the problems that are in this bill. And to sort of respond to some of the things that Thomas was saying, there's not an inherent problem with many of the things in this bill, such as derivatives. It's a great idea to add more transparency to derivatives and to set up these clearinghouses. And in and of itself, I don't have a problem with that. I do have a problem, though, with the government coming and saying, we're going to force this to happen. We're not going to let it evolve naturally. Same thing with consumer protection. It's great to have consumer protections, and the Fed did not do everything well. Ask the Fed, they admit they were not perfect. We shouldn't have, the Fed shouldn't be handling consumer protection, but we can take that and we should couple it with banking regulation. We should have an agency that doesn't just have consumer protection, it should have an oversight of both consumers and the way that banks run. It should think about the rules that it passes in tandem, because when you just have a focus on consumers and you just have a focus on banks separately and you're trying to set up your regulations that way, you wind up with all these unintended consequences. You wind up passing a law that you think is going to help consumers, but if you look at some of the things that this Consumer Financial Protection Agency is going to do, it's going to protect consumers to death. It's going to protect small businesses to death. It's going to add so many compliance costs on the top of things that businesses are trying to do that we're going to see unemployment get worse in the United States.
John, what do you think of that? So it's going to protect consumers to death.
I strongly disagree. The fact of the matter is that if you get out of Washington and get out to the United States, you will go through communities that are desperately looking for banks that are engaged with those communities, that are committed to building relationships, to ultimately giving loans and supporting development at the grassroots level. That's what's needed. And the problem is that so many of our banks are so focused on New York City and the world. They want to go up, not down to where the American people are. So you're going to need some sort of agency in there that says, hey, you have responsibilities. You cannot simply reap the wealth of America, take everybody's savings, take everybody's interest payments, and then shoot it off into derivative experimentation and wild games. John. That's why you need an intervention by an agency like this. The problem that I have is at the other end of the bill. The problem that I have is that while there is some regulation of derivatives, there is not nearly sufficient regulation. The fact of the matter is this $600 trillion market, $600 trillion, is essentially still left with great loopholes, great vulnerability. And the fact of the matter is, when we talk about too big to fail, we're not really talking about an individual bank. What we're talking about is a system that is set up to play financial games at such a high level and with so little transparency and so little accountability that we still run a very real risk that the U.S. banking system could collapse because of a lack of regulation.
John, it's interesting. You were talking about the vagueness of the legislation there. In the report, right at the start of the program, we heard the U.S. Bancorp Chief Executive Richard Davis saying, "We realize that we're now under a microscope." Do you think this is going to add to the transparency and accountability?
Well, that's a very good question. And the truth of the matter is that we're discussing this at an important stage in the discourse rather than the end of it. There still has to be a Senate bill that will be passed. These will be reconciled, then the president will sign or veto the legislation. So we're a long way from the end of the process. What needs to be done in the coming weeks and months is to strengthen the transparency components and strengthen the accountability components. I think it is absolutely vital that we get a much tougher oversight of derivatives trading than is currently contained in the House bill. If that doesn't come in the Senate bill, then at the end of the day, many of the risks and many of the vulnerabilities that caused such a crisis last year will remain, and the talk of financial reform will be more of a promise than a realized change.
Okay, so I'm going to ask all of you whether you think this legislation could prevent another crisis occurring, given what John has said, that it still has to go through Senate. Thomas, what do you think?
No, it's probably not enough. John's point about the loopholes regarding derivatives trading that banks can trade privately out with the customized products is very real. I didn't read in there anything about restrictions on types of credit default swaps. There's this problem, what's called a naked credit default swaps. That is when a credit default swap for your viewers is a sort of insurance contract. You buy protection on a bond, and if the bond bellies up, you get paid. Now, in life insurance, we don't allow you to buy insurance on another person's life. Why? Because it gives you an incentive perhaps to bump them off. Now, we do allow people to buy life insurance on other corporations. We allow banks to speculate on the creditworthiness of other corporations, and that, in a way, gives them an incentive to bump off those other corporations. And indeed, that may have been a very big part behind the failure of Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers, and as AIG started to go under, then that you got a cascade developing. I think naked credit default swaps should have been banned outright.
Okay,
and I think,
well,
again, as John said,
our program's in danger of being bumped off very shortly. Anthony, just very quickly from you, do you think that this could in any way prevent a future crisis?
No, it's not going to prevent a future crisis, and I think that actually is a great question to think about. Are we trying to prevent a future crisis? Can we prevent a future crisis? I would argue that we can't. We've every crisis the United States and the world has faced decades before, going back to 2001, 2002, the dot-com bubble, we tried to put these things in place to prevent another crisis, another one happened. There's going to be another crisis. It's the natural order of the market. It's the way it works. And it's not necessarily a problem, because every time there is a crisis, you're cleaning things out in the market, and you're actually putting yourselves on a better foot to actually continue to march forward I don't think that the attitude behind this financial reform should be to prevent any other crisis from ever happening again. It should be to try and strengthen the market and put in some resiliency so when another problem happens, we don't have it be as bad as it is right now.
Okay, gentlemen, it was very good to talk to you. Thank you for joining us, John Nichols, Anthony Randazzo, and Thomas Pally.